All right, we're with Mohsen Aksin again. Thanks for coming on C9.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Excellent. So it was great talking to you last time about the C++ Renaissance at Microsoft. So here we are.
I didn't know that that word is going to go crazy. it was actually a great reminder of what a great audience we have in Channel 9. I mean, it's such a great audience. We're all humbled by the reaction. that word went much further than we ever could have expected. But no, thank you for coming. It's wonderful, and it was wonderful to do that the last time.
Excellent. So, you know, might as well get right. So we're in Hawaii, in Honolulu, where
you
work.
You are in Hawaii, yes.
It's nice, man.
I feel very fortunate, very blessed.
Yeah. And so the question would be, this is the sort of the development center, if you will, in Hawaii. What do you guys work on here?
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft has a number of remote development centers around the world. We are the smallest. I did an interview a few years back for Behind the Code, and I had mentioned that we were the smallest development center. And years later, we actually got smaller, a little smaller. So I'm pretty sure we're still the smallest. We have about 4 or 5 people here in Hawaii.
Okay.
You know, obviously, I manage the C++ team. I manage, you know, some additional teams, UX teams, and other teams in Redmond. So the majority of people on my teams are on campus, and I spend a lot of time traveling. In the Hawaii office, we have a very small development crew.
Okay.
We have a group of engineers, and we've worked on projects. For example, in Dev 10, we've worked on some of the technology that ultimately showed up as the graphic technology in VS Ultimate.
Okay.
In this release, we are doing quite a bit of work on Visual Studio itself.
Excellent.
But it's basically a dev group. It's essentially a development org. You know, it's the team here actually don't report directly to me. They report to somebody in Redmond who reports back to me somewhere else. But kind of a very development-focused office. So we don't have sales. We don't have consulting. Mm-hmm. We actually don't have program managers here. Not that I don't like program managers, but it's basically a group of engineers. So we do a lot of development and testing here.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Myself included, actually. I do write a little bit of code on the product, and I try and make sure that I do that just to stay grounded a little bit.
Cool. You guys are all native devs, or do you do
We
balance?
Are all, you know, let me say it this way. In Dev 10, a lot of the work we did was almost 100% managed.
Okay.
So the team itself is kind of multi-talented. We did, you know, work with, you know, the progression, the graphing technology, which is, you know, all in WPF and managed code. Mm. The work we've been doing for the last 2 years has been predominantly native.
Okay.
All of us come from a native development background. Mm-hmm. We are all kind of technically part of the C++ team, so it would be unusual for us not to write in C++.
Sure, sure.
I can't talk about what the project we're actually working on now specifically is. Mm-hmm. One of the great unique characteristics it has that I can talk about is we are using native code, we're using managed code, and we're using script code.
Nice.
In the same code base.
Oh.
So. And, you know, I'm actually very passionate about that. I think we find great uses for every one of them, and we kind of we love them and equally.
Excellent. So, you know, going back real quickly to Renaissance, mm-hmm. in some sense, I think when we talked about that, people were thinking that it was a renaissance in the industry. But yeah. To make it clear, it's happening at Microsoft.
It is.
And what does it mean, though? Like, people are saying, well, this doesn't support native code, or I don't see anything really happening there. Where is the renaissance?
And I think, you know, what we're seeing at Microsoft is not that it's not that we even forgot native code. It's that we just took it a little more for granted. It was became like electricity for us. It was just the fabric of everything. It was there. We knew we used it to build Windows. We knew we used it to build Office, to build SQL Server. And again, it's not that we ignored it. We just, I think in my opinion, we just took it for granted. We all, you know, we assumed it's air and electricity. Mm-hmm. And the renaissance we're seeing is kind of renewed focus back on applying it in new ways. Mm. And not just assuming that we're going to use native development technologies for the platform, for accessing the hardware, for high performance. Of course we're going to use it for these things. I think now we're starting to turn our attention in the company, and I would say everywhere in the company, say, you know, what else, where can we get advantage out of using it? Can we exploit the hardware more? Can we exploit the power formula more, etc.? So I'm actually very happy to say that I don't know of a single division in the company now that doesn't have native projects.
Excellent.
And, you know, again, I'm not in a position to talk about any one of them, but I am in a position to say I'm actually very surprised, very pleased, and, you know, kind of thrilled that that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's happening within Microsoft. I think in the industry, C++ has continued to thrive.
Sure.
And has done exceptionally well. as, you know, still probably one of the premier, if not the premier, you know, language in the world.
Totally. And of course, one of the ways I hear people talking about, at least inside the company, I mean, it's sort of, is the whole power and performance, where power in some sense can mean more than just power. It actually means power, like not eating your battery.
Yep. And actually, that's a very good point. We were working, and we work a lot on the compiler, and one of the questions we always ask ourselves, especially when we saw the rise of netbooks and tablets and all these things, for years we've been asking the question of, what can we do to help the power, as in, you know, battery consumption, what have you? And I think the conclusion that a number of people on the compiler side, in the industry side, on the CPU side, has been C++ ends up being a blessing, because the number one thing you want to do is optimize for performance. If you can optimize for performance, that means you have the option to do the same workload faster, get the CPU to idle more, and keep the CPU at a lower power state. There are counterexamples, I'm pretty sure. It'd be interesting to hear from the audience and some of those counterexamples. But I think fundamentally, we found ourselves that the more awareness of power consumption, the more natural the affinity to C++ has become.
Excellent. Now, the last time we talked, we had a sort of a nice conversation, and also with Herb Sutter recently, about the ability of the language to be abstract enough so that you can actually use it, you know, a wide set of people can, but it's also super powerful. So the question, I know you probably have a few questions for the audience, but I mean, how are people actually using it?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think this is, when you have a language like C++ that is so broad and so capable, it ends up being challenging for us, the team working on C++, to try and prioritize scenarios. So, I mean, I do have, I would love to hear from the audience. I think it would be fantastic for us, especially you're friends of ours. Mm-hmm. You know, we're fans of yours. Hopefully you're fans of ours. Mm-hmm. You watch, you know, Channel 9, you read the VC blog. Mm-hmm. What do you use it for? And how broad do you see your usage? We know what we use it for in a lot of cases internally. We definitely use it to build Windows. We use it to build Office. We use it to build SQL Server. We use it to build, you know, significant portions of VS and our own compilers built with our own compiler. And we have, you know, obviously a lot of ambition. You know, a lot of, you know, games are built with it, etc. But we keep having the feeling that we're still, you know, there's still a lot of usage of the language that we're not aware of. One of the questions in particular I'm intrigued to hear from the audience on is, how do they think about the breadth of the language for some of what I would consider to be more mainstream scenarios? Mm-hmm. We talked about kind of the hardcore, you know, the top tier games, or the people who are doing very unique kind of hardware exploitive sensor and otherwise experiences. We've talked about platforms and operating systems and things that you would assume. But web services, mm-hmm. data access, business logic, those are kind of mainstream, or even utilities, data snacking applications, all of these things. Does our audience think about the language in those scenarios? Are they using it in those scenarios? Do they think we should incorporate those scenarios in how we think about the future evolution of the language, and more importantly, the libraries and the tools that we build around it? So I would love to hear from the audience on how should we, you know, how broad do you want us to think about the language and its libraries? Should we continue focusing on kind of system up, or do we also take a top-down approach now that we have a language that has some very, very high-level constructs?
Sure.
So I think it'd be a great question. It'll help us kind of think through our future a little, you know, a little more clearly.
Absolutely. Now, one of the big things, you know, one of the reasons I'm here in Hawaii is I'm fortunate enough to go to the International Conference on Software Engineering. Well, I've been talking to a lot of researchers and practitioners.
That's great.
And there, one of the problems that we were talking about was obviously concurrency and parallelism.
Yep.
And you see things in languages like C Sharp where they're experimenting with adding sort of async, which has nothing to do with concurrency, but it's still an interesting approach. What about in your world? Like, without, like, I don't know if we can talk about what's actually being worked on, but
I mean, I could talk a little bit about things we've already shipped. We've definitely had, well, let me actually step all the way back. It's a unique language in that you have access to the hardware all the way down to intrinsics. So, and all the way down to inline assembly below that if you absolutely have to. So because of that, I suspect that it's still been the language and probably continues to be the language that people who are adamant about extracting every bit of every core of every hyperthread on every CPU are using. In Dev 10, we've done work with our parallel libraries and our concert runtime. and the sister brother to that, the TPL libraries on the managed side. And I think we're seeing some very, very good adoption of those libraries. They definitely kind of remove a layer of complexity and allow you to deal with concurrency. The work C# is doing, has already announced, is I think is kind of a stunning piece of beautiful simplicity, very classic C# in that sense, about doing kind of asynchronous IOs and letting you rendezvous, you know, kind of ideas very similar to kind of futures that are present in C++ libraries, present in environments like Ajax and JavaScript and are becoming more prominent in JavaScript. So that's, I would say that's a space we're interested in. There's been activity already in the community and in libraries on some of these ideas that we are looking at, we're interested in. But also, this almost relates back to my old topic. We're not going to just focus on making kind of a particular, fairly common case easy. We really do step back to our genesis and ask ourselves, concurrency is very, very hard. I don't need to tell anybody this. And you quickly get into a lot of those issues about you know, deadlocks and deadlock avoidance. And once you have shared data, then things become really, really, really problematic, regardless of syntactic or library support. And you end up with data races. You end up with these very, very complicated problems. So I think it's a problem that's always gonna is high on our radar. Will continue to be high on our radar. We are intrigued by the reaction that the other languages are getting. Asynchronous patterns, I think, is a very nice first step. Parallel libraries are a great next step. And I think, again, I'd love, you know, get feedback from the audience as well on, and we have some ideas in-house on what's beyond that. Where do we go next now that we know how to give you those building blocks? But it's definitely, I would say, it's definitely one of the biggest problems, and it's a problem that's moving all the way down to the phone. Because the phones are becoming multi-core, so it it's definitely for a while it was kind of pigeonholed into, well, if you don't have an 80-way SMP machine, then it's not a very interesting problem. Yeah. I think it's a problem that's become much more mainstream over the last number of years.
Yeah, it's interesting because in some sense I wonder why, you know, kind of just going down a little bit of a rabbit hole because it's fun. I was talking to a researcher yesterday, and one of the things he's been working on is actually making a concurrency enlightened kernel. So where he has this module in the kernel, which is an auto tuner, and there's, you have to write code, you decorate your code a little bit with, this is going to be concurrent, blah blah blah, and it can actually auto tune in real time as your thing is running. It seems like there should be some work being done down at that level, not that there isn't, but
I mean, I think there's a lot of work we've done. You know, we have a great library team that's doing almost exclusively focused on parallelism and concurrency. They've done work on things like parallel profiling, parallel debugging, and taking all the way to multi-machine and all sorts of stuff. So I think concurrency is going to find its way all the way to the bottom of the stack and all the way up to tools and languages and services and what have you. I would say, you know, for those of us who grew up on concurrency equals thread and interlocked exchanges and semaphores, I am stunned how much more complex and rich the modern world is. But I'm also almost equally stunned that crap, we still deal with deadlocks. We still deal with data races. We still deal with these problems. And I think that both the academia and the industry are going to just need to continue working on this one. I don't think there's a silver bullet here.
Absolutely.
I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon. First, I'd love to see it, but I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon. It's a fun problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And so speaking of fun problems, when you know, since you're running the engineering team for C++, one of the questions I think people out there have, and you know, I certainly have as well, is how do you allocate resources to focus on when you're dealing with this language that's used so widely? Like, how does that work for you?
Yeah, and it's perhaps boring and apple pie, but actually, this is kind of how we work. We have a team that is very disciplined about actually writing down and reminding ourselves, why do we exist? Who uses us? One of the reasons I asked the question is we always ask ourselves, who's using us? Why are they using us? Why us? Why not somebody else? And what makes us unique? What's our unique selling proposition? What's our unique value proposition? We're good at, we're getting better, but we're getting better at writing down what is our vision, what is our mission. We have some fantastic, even process and organizational people on our team that are helping us stay very disciplined, very focused on answering those precise questions. So we take that, And that becomes kind of our, you know, people talk about it as the North Star or our vision or what have you. That becomes kind of where we want to end up. But we can't just go because we also have the reality of our committed customers. We do build Windows. We do build an Office. We build billions of lines of code in ISVs around the world. So, and we have new customers every day, et cetera. So we basically take our existing obligations. We take this future that we have. And we kind of, you know, and then we also look at company trends and industry trends. And we kind of combine all of that into a formula, not a very scientific formula, you know, but that's the input to the process. And, you know, again, I think we're, you know, part of the reason I pose some questions to the Channel 9 audience is to incorporate more and more. We hear a lot from users. We do hear a lot, you know, directly, indirectly, connect them otherwise. But so we take all of that and then we begin a prioritization exercise. And that's, you know, I would say that drives the resource allocations. Related to this whole thing is every release we insist on having a more focused theme to the release. So when we take all of that, we look at the next release, then we ask ourselves, okay, what could be a center of gravity? And center of gravity is a careful word. You know, it's not means everything is precisely related to it, but it kind of guides the release. If we were all birds and we were flocking, it kind of guides our flock together in a particular direction. So so every release, we pick that center of gravity. And in the next release, you will see that center of gravity kind of materialize in terms of what is the team focused on. And that's actually what puts us in a difficult position sometimes where we have to say no to things. And that's always difficult in a product that's very broadly used. But that's how we start prioritizing. We have a fixed number of resources. So, you know, we have a work in progress process. I think every release, I hope we are getting better every release, at least from what I can tell, in terms of staying a little more true to our center of gravity, our focus, learning what to say no to, and dealing with the consequences. People will beat us up, and we hear from them. And actually, that becomes, remember when I said our obligation? That becomes an obligation that when we do the recalc for the next release, then that becomes very important input, and you know, and so on and so forth. I think there's been some things in Dev 10 that we've heard very, very clearly from our audience on that we've, you know, we've taken some action that I believe we've actually already disclosed on what we're going to do to address them.
Excellent. Do you have any statistics? So I'm going to kind of go out on a limb, but do you have statistics sort of around how many Visual C++ developers actually use any of the other tools inside of Visual Studio? So my question really comes down to faster release cycle. Maybe with experimental releases or stuff, but since you're bound to this much larger, excellent product, I'm not criticizing.
No, absolutely, I think this is actually a very good broad question throughout Microsoft. And we, one of the things you're seeing us do as a company, is not even just Visual Studio, is be very deliberate about the things that we believe require extended cadence, long cadence for, versus things that we believe we can be and should be and will become much more agile on. If you look at our flagship product for the company, Windows, Windows has a very nice mix of things that they're very disciplined on, how often they release it, and they go through an enormous amount of rigor because of the obligation they have to a billion people around the world, versus things that span cycles perhaps in a shorter way, say Internet Explorer, and you take it all the way down to Windows Live, where they now are empowered to be much more agile. And I think that formula, you've seen examples of that in Office. And I think what you're going to see is that formula, that discipline of we're not, I can't say that, hey, Microsoft is going to be the company that releases all of its software every 6 months on that cadence. I think what you'll see is be very clear and more deliberate on some software we're going to be, is fairly complex. We're doing our users a disservice by releasing it more frequently. And, you know, some people have kind of, you know, felt the impact, thankfully not of ours, but of others. And but that's not the only way we operate. We have to operate at a, you know, I have a great example from Dev 10. I keep calling it Dev 10, Visual Studio 2010. And we had a lot of ambition to do a lot of work around productivity features in the IDE. But the date and the way the schedule was working would have made it, basically would have slipped the entire release to make those features. What we decided to do is decouple those and use this wonderful mechanism we introduced in, I'm going to call it Dev 10, which is the extensibility manager. and the V6 model, and we decoupled those features. We put them into the what became the productivity pack for Visual Studio. I think it became insanely downloaded. And I don't know, actually, I don't know many users who are not who are using Visual Studio and not using the productivity pack. It's something we've released and updated on a much more aggressive cycle. Because out of band, extension manager, we have an active marketplace of these parts that people can download. So I think you'll see more and more examples of that. We're no different as a team. I would say C++, a lot of the work we've done, actually the native ALM, the first iteration of that actually shipped as a V6 for Dev 10, or you know, a small portion of that. And specifically we did the support for what we called internally progression, which is the graphing technology and dependency graphs and dependency analysis and all that work that is in Visual Studio Ultimate. We released that off-cycle and so on and so forth. So I think it's a mix, and you know, I personally like that because it allows me to work every now and then on things that we're shipping all the time, we're getting a lot of feedback on, and sometimes work on very, very hard problems that do take us quite a while to solve.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit now, you know, specifically on the language.
Okay.
Because, you know, a recent interview with her really got me thinking about a few things. And with C++, it's different than the other languages. You know, C# is a standard,
yeah.
I mean, but we're the only ones who really make it.
Yeah.
Whereas you have, you know, various contributors around the world,
yeah.
Big-time compiler makers. How do you feel personally about, like, the hardcore, you know, you must implement all the standards, or, like, do you worry a little bit about, or, do, like, were you upset when concepts didn't make it in general?
I
mean, like,
you know, I'm a C++ dev, so actually I have to separate two things.
Good.
As a C++ dev, I have pet peeves.
Okay.
And also as a C++ dev who've been coding for a long time, I get surprised every now and then on things that I dismiss and I end up using. So I had, you know, maybe, I don't know if I should use, or should not use, there were examples in libraries in particular that I had dismissed, only to come back and as being kind of, it felt experimental or rocket science. It felt like it was the work of people who did because they could, not because they should.
Okay.
And yet when I used them, I'm like, oh, no, actually, this wasn't that. This was actually, they should have done this. This is really useful. So I'm going to separate the two.
Okay.
As a C++ dev, I've gotten a little more bullish on, you know, just innovate, go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who has to both do a couple things, one is, you know, we don't own the language, we don't control it. We're part of a standard.
Mm-hmm.
We respect that. We like that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We think we can, we have, and we will continue to work with this standard. I understand why we have to be more disciplined. So the dev in me wants features, features, features.
Mm-hmm.
The business manager partnership work with standards committees part is much more disciplined and careful about that.
Okay.
I think our attitude is we like working with the standard. We have fantastic people like Herb on the standards committee. We love the fact that the language is evolving. It's actually almost parallel as the last conversation. As long as the cadence is reasonable and professional, and so far it's proving to be. And as long as we're empowering people outside, one of the wonderful things about C++ is that the language is so flexible that people can overcome problems with the language on their own, on top of C++. And those become eventually part of the standard. Sometimes they change the language. Sometimes they just move to the library standard. I've been using a lot of shared putter lately. I don't know if you ever did. You probably did interviews with SDL.
Absolutely.
So, you know, again, for me, that was, I don't know that I would write code without it anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't feel the need. It was like, just share it, but I'm sure I want to get the feedback on that because there's overhead.
Yeah.
But for anything that I expect, I'm going to be passing it around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of something that started outside and drizzled, made it all the way into the standard, and then eventually it would cause the standards and others to look at, are the concepts like this worthwhile looking into in the language? We've done that with CLI on GC, for example, with you know, C++ CLI. So I actually feel good about where the language is. It's evolved.
Mm-hmm.
It's evolved at a reasonable cadence. There's a standard bodies that seems to be working. It seems, you know, enough ideas make it through. Some ideas don't.
Mm-hmm.
The implementations are really tough. It's a very complicated language.
I'm sure it is.
And I would say that's probably, you know, the dev in me wants a lot more of those features in. But I have to manage the team. We have to release on time, and we have to maintain our cadence. And you know, so I kind of like that interplay.
Excellent. So let's go really quickly to C++ minus minus C.
Yeah.
And there are still plenty of people writing C, definitely at Microsoft, all the kernel guys. What's your feeling about, you know, the way that that's evolving? So we always see on Channel 9, there's always going to be, even on this thread, there's going to be a comment, what about C99?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you just talk about
Well, you know, Herb, one of the things we have done is we used to actually have two different standards people, one on C++ and one on C.
Okay.
And I was never really happy with this whole idea of the kind of the bifurcation of, you know, I love both languages. They both come with very unique value props. So one of the things we had done, actually, I think it was Craig would remember, or Herb would definitely remember, a while back, is we decided that we wanted to have one person and we wanted to have some continuity. The level of investment, the level of IQ we're going to put on C++ is the level of investment IQ we're going to put on C.
Okay.
So at least from a standards process, and I, you know, again, this is not selling Herb, but I definitely trust Herb's judgment to help guide us on where are the areas that we really have to pay a lot more attention to on both standards and invest in, versus areas that we should probably either push back if we disagree, or, you know, wait a little while or have a conversation with our customers, a deeper conversation, before we go ahead and kind of apply them. But, you know, it's interesting in that I was a C dev like most. I became a C++ dev, but I was really a C with classes developer and not really a C++ developer. And in the last, you know, I don't know, 8 years or so it's been a while, I've become more of a purist C++ dev. But I find examples in my own code where I find for certain usages I'll probably just revert back to kind of a C model. We have some interesting forcing functions, like DLL boundary is obviously something we tend to lean on C or COM more than we do C++. But I think that's, you know, kind of as a related comment, I do think C is probably going to go down in history as, it might go down as the most important language that's ever been done.
Interesting.
It might go down as, you know, mostly because of it's going to have a lot of longevity. It has had a lot of longevity. And historically, when a new language has come, especially in mainstream languages took so long to beat the entrenched. You know, let's even take two languages that I care about, C and C++. When C++ showed up as a general purpose programming language with a new value proposition, object orientation, templates, and metaprogramming, etc., when C showed up with this, where we were all doing assembly, it didn't take it very long to start winning. And it didn't take, not only did it take very long because of ease of use, which is a typical, or developer productivity, it started approaching perf, and once we got into out of order execution and all sorts of stuff in processors, a lot of us who are assembly programmers say, okay, I give up, C1.
Yeah.
And when new languages show up, they bump into an entrenched language. I don't know if we're going to experience anything in history where a new mainstream, general purpose programming language just shows up and wins.
Yeah.
It takes it a long time and it chisels away. And even then it ends up not a zero-sum game. Java did not eliminate C++. C# did not eliminate Java. JavaScript did not eliminate C# or JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And that's, C did eliminate assembly by a huge, I mean, so in a way, I'm, you know, again, I am, for many kind of, perhaps kind of nostalgic reasons, I'm a huge fan of what that language has been able to do. And part of me actually wishes we would see that phenomenon again.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I see bifurcation. I see a lot of diversity.
Sure.
I don't see a language coming out of nowhere and saying, yep, pretty much all of you, get off what you're doing now, all of you move here.
Sure.
And,
that's
succeed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, because if you look at sort of in the industry, I think the work that Walter Bright has done with D is interesting.
Yeah.
And then there's Go that Rob Pike just threw out.
I looked at Go, yeah.
What do you think of Go? Just out of curiosity, man.
I mean, again, I'm a big fan of, in the game industry, and I'm a big fan of some of the things the game guys do. They're very precise about when you describe, if you develop a game and you go talk to a producer, the first question they ask you is, what's your unique selling proposition? They call them the USPs. And I'm a big fan of that. If you can't describe your unique selling proposition crisply, it's not you fail. It basically, at least in the game world, you go into another bucket. You go into the bucket of the mainstream and not the bucket of, I'm going to make a big bet on you, you know, kind of a thing. And my feeling in a lot of those languages, they're all very interesting. Some of them overcome particular deficiencies in, say, C++. Data is an interesting example, or the modifier, the variable declaration syntaxes, and all these kind of complex modifiers on types. The question that I have is that a unique selling proposition? Is that enough to tip the scale for me as a C++ dev? Mm-hmm. And this one is, I'm not even speaking as Microsoft, this is as a C++ dev, from a lot of those languages that I've seen wonderful things, I've seen nice things, I've seen very clever things. Mm-hmm. Have I seen a thing that tips the scale for me and says, oh, that's it, I'm gone? No, I have not.
And excellent.
Again, it's a kind of a personal opinion. It's not, necessarily company opinion, but I think between C and C++, they're such formidable chameleon languages. Mm. You can turn them into so many things, especially, C with bizarre ways like macros, but C++ with more powerful ways like templates.
Yes.
And both, you can turn them into these bizarre, kind of almost what you want to make of them, and that's challenging.
Absolutely. Now, you said the T word, which is really interesting, templates.
Yeah.
The generosity, the kind of the power they give you, the flexibility. One of the problems with templates seems to be dealing with exceptions. Like, in some sense, you can generate these massively huge blobs of information that really don't tell you very much. And so my question for you would be, and we haven't really talked about this before, like, as you think about Visual C++ moving forward and what you guys are doing, how is our exception model getting better in this particular case?
Well, with templates, I would say, it's a good question to, I actually had not thought about the exception side of it.
Okay.
What the area that's been higher on my radar is the quality of error reporting on templates.
Sure.
And it's improved as an SDL user for a long time. Every release has gotten a little better. It would be great to hear from people actually on how well they feel we've done on the quality of, I would say, two big things in templates that we've continued to chisel at. And I'll double check on the exception one, but that would be a third one, but maybe fourth one, because code generation also is impacted by it. But our error reporting and visualization in the debugger.
Mm.
Those are two things that in the past were a nightmare.
Yeah.
I know in the original days, this is probably 1995.
Okay.
For me, being able to debug SDL or look at SDL collections or any of these things, vectors or what have you, that was a nightmare. And if there was an error, I still remember there were cases, if I remember correctly, C++ used to have a limit of 255 character limit on types.
Huh.
And you could easily do a template of a template of a template of a type, yes, of a type of a type, and boom, blow right past that. And with namespaces and what have you. And we bumped into it in a few projects. I think a lot of those problems, thankfully, are behind us. Name limits are gone.
Okay.
We have debugger visualizers.
Mm-hmm.
In C++ for a lot of the SDL stuff, for at least collections and strings and what have you, which are, it's one of those, I don't know how we coded without them, but, now that we have them, we've done a lot of work on quality of error reporting, quality of compiler failure, meaning during parsing, of when we run into template problems. Personally, I think we have more work to do on that front. I have to think more about, the kind of the interrelatedness of, exceptions in general, I would say, is probably one of the areas that I still feel, I don't know about the external C++ community, the internal C++ community at Microsoft is still divided. And even the people who are kind of really C++, they're not C with classes people, are still, there is, and it's not whether you want or not want exceptions. I think that's not the issue, is how pervasive they are throughout the code. And I think that's, that, there are, so it'd be also interesting to hear from the audience where are you guys on exceptions? Is this it, we obviously support, we support, you could do whatever you want with error processing, and you can obviously use C++ exceptions. But we're less draconian about this as a language, as libraries, as a runtime. As libraries, probably a little more draconian, but as, say, an environment like Java or .NET, which are very, very precise, exception-based systems.
Yeah.
So it'd be good to hear. But templates are fun. Templates are kind of crazy. Templates is definitely an area I still try and get my mind wrapped around every now and then, because I've seen people do things with them that I could not imagine were doable. But and every now and then, Quint is like, this actually works. Like, and, people who know the language better than I, like her, yes, they do work.
That's interesting. I mean, that's one of the cool things about the language. You can find yourself saying, I didn't know it did that. I do that a lot. People do that a lot with JavaScript, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, can it really? Wow.
And JavaScript and C++, in a bizarre way, have kind of similarity on opposite ends of the spectrum. JavaScript is insanely dynamic. And because it's insanely dynamic, and you can eval, and functions are objects, and, you know, basically expressions are effectively free, you pass them around, it's allowed people to do amazing things. It's allowed people to do, you know, closures and all these things, you know, in trivial ways.
Yeah.
Because they're just built in, you know, they did not need to invent delegates or events or, you know, lambdas. Or they had them because functions are objects, and expressions are objects. So JavaScript became this chameleon because it was so dynamic. C++ became this chameleon because the type system was so powerful. And so the type system was programmable, and now you have template writers doing template metaprogramming or doing these, I think they're called embedded DSLs in C++, that are creating languages like, wow, that's kind of crazy. I can't believe this is legal C++. And I can't believe how much work is happening by the compiler now. So I like that because, in a way, it's not like C++ and JavaScript are bumping into each other. They play a similar kind of role. They're both, you know, chameleons. They're both very flexible, which means they both get abused, by the way.
Yeah.
They're easier to abuse. But here's one that is betting on a very, very dynamic, very rich, very simple core. Here's one that's betting on a very rich type system and the power of running a compiler and taking your time at the compiler.
Sure.
And it actually, I thought the two... let me say it this way. They should play together now more nicely because they're kind of... and today, if you want to mix C++ and JavaScript code in your program, the hosting models, the integration models, the type models have a long way to go. But
sure.
If you are in JavaScript, you enjoy it. If you're in C++, you kind of enjoy it in different ways.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's clearly happening in the industry is this notion of translation or you know, going from one language to another language. Somebody's written, you know, you have Python, and then you spit out C++.
Yep.
Somebody's done the same thing with JavaScript, right?
Yep.
So it's really kind of interesting how these languages are playing
together.
And you've
seen, you know, you've seen environments like GWT and Script Sharp on our side.
Yeah.
Where basically, it's the source would be Java or C Sharp, and the output would be JavaScript. JavaScript's becoming kind of a popular runtime because it's fairly present. I think we'll see more of that. But we'll also see them, the fact that you needed another language becomes all, in and of itself, a wake-up call for the target language. The fact that you needed Python to ultimately get C code or C++ code causes someone like me to like, I say, well, what could we have done in C++ to make you use C++ instead of that?
Sure.
And, you know, similarly in JavaScript, if I was on JavaScript, I would be looking at, well, what is it about these other languages? And that, you know, and sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just dogma, you know, sometimes just kind of people want a pure way of doing things, and those you obviously respect the dogma that people are coming from. You're not going to turn JavaScript into Java, or you know, you need to respect what JavaScript is. But I would say every now and then there are nuggets of value that you can look at and say, I'm not going to try and turn C++ into Python, but if the only, or Perl, what is always my favorite example, if the only reason you used it was variable interpolation inside of string literals, like, and which is something the standard body is now looking at, but or has looked at, is maybe we should fix, you know, variable interpolation in Perl is where you can put a variable name inside a string literal, and the compiler substitutes it, which is really nice for building, like, you know, instead of this plus that, or printfs with %s, %s, you can basically compose, you know. So for me, that was always a good example. I knew a lot of friends who were just Perl because of that. Well, if that's why you're using Perl, maybe we should fix that in C++ or C#.
Yes.
But in other cases, it's much, much, much more. You know, I'm not saying, you know, a lot of people use Perl for enormous amount of text processing that I'm not sure would be the right fit for C++. But again, to my earlier question, those are all great examples. Do you want to use it for string processing?
Excellent. So please remember to answer his questions, Niners, and everyone watching this. Now, let's, you know, briefly, when you think about the future, and this isn't talking about, you know, our future, because you can't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't talk about product plans for sure.
So what do you see as, like, you know, I'd like to get this, your feedback on this in some sense. What's missing today from the language, for example, or even the tooling? And where would you, like, what would you like to see? Like, what new things would you like to see added in a broad sense that you think would make your life easier as a C++ dev?
I actually think, you know, amazing enough, we've gone back and forth on language versus libraries.
Okay.
I'm definitely These days I'm a little bit more library, a little less language.
Okay.
I think we have, and again, it's contingent partly on the answers to some of the questions I posed. Where are we on libraries? And they exist. Let me be very clear. Many, many, many libraries exist for C++ in the world. I think what I'm looking for is what libraries should the world make almost just a de facto part of the language. You know, okay. SDL now is part of the language. It's yeah. as, you know, so for people to say, hey, you don't have a BCL, I'm like, no, we absolutely C++ has a BCL. If you want strings or you want collections,
yeah.
that's a solved problem. It's called SDL. It works.
Yeah.
But so I'm in, you know, so I'm intrigued by these other domains. You know, data access,
mm-hmm.
Web services, mm-hmm. REST, the relationship between C++ and other languages, embedded languages like not just inline assembly but shader languages, mm-hmm. scripting languages. Some of these other things are definitely, some of those you are not going to be able to overcome with libraries in a clean way. So that becomes kind of more of a, there are, you know, again, depending on breadth, and this is, again, I'm, you know, I would like to have something like Link, which we have a lot of the building blocks for in C++. We have lambdas, we have templates, we have a lot of the building blocks for it. Should we as a community engage on data access and learn from the great, great work that's happened on the managed side on something like Link for data access?
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, it's just a sea of stuff. I feel good about where the language is today.
Mm-hmm.
I look out and I see some things coming down the kind of the horizon. And, you know, definitely C++ programmers are going to be dealing with shaders a lot more than they have. They're going to be dealing with this phenomenon internally we call it scripted native, where you have native and you have scripted code kind of together a lot more than they have in the past. They're going to obviously be dealing with parallelism. We talked about concurrency in the past a lot more. And I think they might, depending on where things are going, C++ might be asked to take on more breadth than we had assumed in the past on things like data and things like text processing and things like web services.
Sure.
And you know, I think it's kind of an exciting future. It's the language gives us a nice foundation to build upon. We continue to be fairly conservative on the language, more liberal, obviously, on libraries if they're part of the standard, and then much more liberal if we believe these libraries are just pure value add. We don't consider them, we're investing in them, but we don't consider them to be part of the standard of the language.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. So, hey, it's always great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And I really, you know, really encourage people to answer these questions and answer them on C9. And we'll make sure you get them.
Absolutely.
Everybody on your team.
It's wonderful. Thank you all again. I'm a fan, and thank you all for watching. It's great.
Absolutely.
It's very humbling.
Cool. Hey. All I can say is take care.
Okay, thanks.